Hello, welcome y'all. It's Dr. Nicole Truesdell here, and I am your host for my podcast, Abolitionist Dreamscape. So welcome. Now, this is episode 3, and today we're going to talk about the body and what it actually means to be human. Before I begin, though, I first want to give a thank you to all those who tuned in for episodes 1 and 2. I greatly appreciate the support, the comments, and the feedback, as that lets me know that the work I'm doing actually matters to other people outside myself. And if you want to support my work, you can do so a number of different ways. I have a Patreon of the same name, Abolitionist Dreamscapes, in which I do a lot more in-depth teaching and reflection upon various aspects of abolitionism and dreaming in the present day through a Black, queer, non-Christian, spiritual-based lens. All right. And I also teach on TikTok, and I have a YouTube as well. And if my work feeds you, you can go ahead and feed me back, because it is with the support of both patrons and donors that I'm able to continue to teach in the public. So I accept donations in my Cash App, my Zelle, Patreon, PayPal, and Venmo. And I'll have the show in the show notes, those various links, and all my handles are Dr. Nicole Truesdell for those various donation platforms. Okay. So let's get into it, though. So today, again, we're going to talk about the body and what it means to be human. Now, when I left off the last episode, pleasure, we had just heard in the news this idea of maybe there were aliens in the U.S. In particular, the news was very big about potential aliens. And that really had me thinking about how the kind of hoopla about other life forms really shows us how much we are disconnected from our own sense of humanity individually and collectively, because this idea that other life forms would somehow want to be defensive of humans is really just shows how much humans are defensive of one another because of these colonial projects, and how the idea of contact is always seen as a point of conquest instead of a point of reflection and relationship building and knowledge, you know, generation. And so the kind of initial reactions we're seeing in the papers and from government, you know, these so-called government officials about the potentiality of what aliens could be and what that could mean for us really is a reflection upon how much our understanding of our humanity is still very much filtered through a colonial lens. Then life kept life in, and right now it's, I'm recording this on August 12th, and we had just gotten off of the kind of biggest event, I think, of the year, the Montgomery Brawl that happened down in Montgomery, Alabama, about a few days ago, probably about a week ago by now, in which we saw Black folks basically defending themselves against a white mob who didn't want to move their boat. Now, that brawl itself and the aftermaths of it, on my TikTok, I talked about how that was, this is a key moment for us to think about Black deconstruction in a new light, because this is a cultural reset around our ability to basically say no more, no more to the violence enacted upon us by the state via actors who align themselves with the state that is anti-Black, anti-Indigenous, anti-women, anti-queer, anti-disabled, basically anti-anything not attached to the Christian white patriarchy and his ideals of what it means to be quote unquote human. When you don't fit into that narrowness, that you are met with violence in these violent states that also make themselves to appear as if they're somehow full of democracy and for peace. But the democracy and peace always comes at the expense of the margins, right? Whether it be internal to the US or external across the globe. Well, this really got me thinking some more about what it means to be human, because in that moment of those Black folks who were defending the Black co-captain who was on that dock just doing his job, right? There was a kind of moment of presence in which the body was activated and the body literally was saying no more. And so when the body leads, the mind will follow. And what ensued was essentially the Montgomery Brawl, essentially Montgomery Freedom Ride of 2023, in which a folding chair really took center stage to have us redirect our understandings and conversations around violence, around defense, and around what it means to defend yourself in a violent state that will always see your body as a threat. And so when your body is a threat, what happens when you need to then meet that threat with another form of violence? And that really, to me, is summing up this idea of what it means to be human. This is what I mean by that. Think about the first time you realized you had a body. Okay, I want you to kind of just sit for a moment, contemplate, and ask yourself, when did you realize you had a body, right? You may have been very young, and this may not be a conscious thing, but at one point or another, you had a sense of self, and that self was in a vessel that we call a body, okay? But before you become aware of essentially your body in a kind of conscious way, your body is already reacting the minute you come out of your caregiver's womb. Right? Because when you come out of the womb, you are only in reaction mode. You are only in doing what your body needs, and your body needs sustenance. So babies cry and wail because they're signaling that their body needs something. So when we come out of the womb, y'all, we are very body forward because you are only human if you have a body, right? And that body can have many different forms, many different ways of looking and being, but the key fundamental thing is to be a human means you have a body. And so what happens though when we disconnect from that body? What happens when we no longer allow our body to lead? Then instead we think we go through our minds and have our minds lead the body. When and why does that happen? Well, you got to think about it. In a capitalistic society, in a Western racial capitalistic society, the minute your body comes out of that womb, your body is marked by the state in one way or another. And it's go through the birth certificate, you're given a name, you're given an age, you're given a weight, and you're also given a race and a sex, right? And as you go through life, you're given more identity markers. You're giving more ways the body is marked. And that can be through your religion, through your height, through your weight, through your sexuality, through your economic status, right? There's various ways that our bodies are marked in society. And when our bodies become marked in those different ways, that teaches us how we're supposed to perform in that society. Now, because those are markers of identities, right, have these various systems attached to it, because race and gender and sex and class and all of those different markers, right, are socially constructed. Those social constructions have real consequences, because when you are marked in certain ways, your body is then deemed to be of a certain way. So what do I mean by that? I'm a Black woman. I'm a 6'3", light skin, mixed race Black woman. Okay. And that's what I've been most of my life, even when not maybe necessarily 6'3", but I've always been taller. I've always been bigger. I've always been marked as a woman. I see myself as a woman, and I am a Black woman, mixed race Black woman. All of those markers together on my body very early on let me see myself as always having a needing to be of service to other people, because being a woman, being a Black woman, being a girl at that time, right? Being a young Black girl who was also bigger in stature, my body was always read as somebody who could literally just handle more work, handle more service, handle more weight. And I learned those things, and my body was disciplined in those ways through various institutions. So of course, through school, I went to Catholic school. And if any of y'all went to Catholic school, you know the one thing Catholics know how to do is instill your ass with some guilt. Guilt and shame, baby, guilt and shame. While also you are told to be of service, right? Because the only way many of these churches operate, especially the Catholic Church, is by you giving up your time and your labor, because they sure as hell ain't gonna pay you. Let's be real. So from a very young, early age, right, I was in Catholic school. So being marked through a religious lens, right, my body was seen as always to be of service. It needed to be more docile. It needed to be more demure. But at the same time, I was big and powerful. So then I was also told my body was meant to be in sports. So then very early on, I was put in both basketball and volleyball. And then through high school and then eventually in college, I stayed with volleyball because honest to God, basketball was just too damn exhausting. All that damn running. And then you might get touched. I didn't want to be touched. And if you bump up to me too hard, I had a temper when I was a kid, so I might punch you back. Like there was a lot of things. So for me, volleyball just felt safer and on one side of the court. So, but honestly, if I'm being honest though, I didn't really ever enjoy it. I thought I was supposed to enjoy sports. It was one thing that me and my dad connected on, but I was one of five kids, right? So when you can get your parents' attention, you get it any way, shape, or form. And so sports seemed to be one way that I could connect with him. So I stayed in. And then it was very evident that if I tried anything else, when I was in eighth grade, I actually tried to be a cheerleader. Child, I don't know what I was thinking, but I know what I was thinking. I was trying to fit in. I wanted to fit in. And it was eighth grade. Puberty's hit me, right? Like, I had all the other girls in the class were quote unquote dating. I thought I should be dating, but didn't really know what that meant. I sure as hell wasn't tapped in enough to figure out if I was gay or straight. I never even asked that question, because the assumption was that if you were a girl, then you wanted a boy. And if you weren't a boy, you wanted a girl. There's nothing else there, especially when a Catholic school, and especially on the far south side of Chicago, the south side suburbs in the 80s to the early 90s, child. By. There was already a disconnect with the fact that my dad was white, my mom was black, and she was never around. So it was always this, my older white dad that looked like Santa Claus dropping off all these black kids. That was already a scandal, right? There was already a way that my family was ostracized. My dad, usually other parents didn't really talk to him. And there was a number of families who also came from big families. It was a Catholic school again. So there was a number of families who had at least 3 to 5 to 7 kids, and it kind of came through in waves. So it wasn't like people wouldn't have known one another. It was a small school, but it was also also small families, because families had multiple kids. Again, Catholics, okay? So all that to say, there was a way that was the one space, though, that was acceptable for me, acceptable for all of us to be in, the one space we may, both individually and collectively as a family, had any kind of recognition from the space that we were in quote unquote community, right? Because this was the community, church, the school, and the like. So from a very early age, though, I didn't want to necessarily be an athlete. I actually wanted to be more of a musician. I played the trombone for a brief spell when they brought it to school as an extracurricular. And I really didn't like the teacher. And it was just really, quite frankly, was just racist and very classist. And we couldn't afford it after one season. So I never picked it back up. And I was in drama club, but again, never picked that back up because it wasn't seen as a space that my body was accepted. So that I allowed myself to be influenced by what I was told my body was acceptable to be in, which was, again, in sports, but also to be of service. So the oldest daughter of, I have 4 siblings underneath me, you know, the idea of being in Catholic school from both K through 8, but also in high school, this kind of idea that my body was just basically a location and site for other people to essentially dictate what I was supposed to do, was heavily embedded. Even when I pushed back against that, especially pushing back against the church and then going to grad school and all the like, again, like I said in episode, I think, 2, I just traded one God for another, because it was still in this institutionalization of the body as a site of work that when I let go of, quite frankly, Yahweh and white Jesus, there was still the kind of spirit of capitalism there, but being filtered through the social justice lens. And so there's a way that in those other spaces that I was trying to be, you know, be committed to justice-focused processes and justice-focused practices, those spaces still reproduce the same ideas that our body are locations and sites of service. So even as we're trying to create and make new ways of being and try to be in collaboration and community, all of us were usually burnt out because we were overworking. We had our regular jobs, then doing other stuff to fulfill the needs we felt the institution wasn't doing. So we're doing more on top of that, plus also trying to have our own lives. And as I got older, my own family, but nothing ever released. It just piled on more and more and more. And see, what happens, y'all, is that is a literal function and conditioning of these capitalistic societies. There's no way that none of us can escape some way, shape, or form that story of only seeing your body as a location to be producing for other people in one way, shape, or form. But how you're producing and how your body is marked and how you internalize that will be filtered through how your body is read from that society, the identities and how they collide both in your body and then colliding within structure, right? And this is the function of capitalism, because a nation that is founded upon and relying upon as an economic system has embedded within it the idea that it will always have labor that will either be free or below the cost of what the actual labor is producing, so that there's always a profit. So in these societies, we have had to learn over centuries how to be disconnected from our bodies, because that disconnection from our bodies is how we learn how to dehumanize ourselves, so that when we're in these spaces and institutions, we see our role as either having to conform, having to buy in and do it better, or having to disrupt it, or whatever else you want to do in those kind of ways that we see ourselves engaging in these spaces. But at the end of the day, they all require us, and they all are predicated upon us still reducing ourselves down through a disconnection of our body to somehow being either a worker or being of service. And see, this is the conundrum that many times will happen when you don't realize that that dehumanization is, we must first do it to ourselves, so that when we're in dehumanizing spaces, we then can basically tolerate it. That is the foundation of colonization and colonial projects. And that is also rooted within what I would call a very deep spiritual warfare. Because when you are disconnected from your body, that means you are disconnected from your ancestors, where you came from, because literally your body is made up of two people coming together and creating life, because two people from their lines came together and created life, and so forth and so back and going back. So you don't even have to necessarily, quote unquote, believe in any kind of spiritual realm. The reality is your body is made up of a creation from bodies who are made up of other bodies. So just from a strict DNA perspective, you are literally your ancestors, right? You are literally, they are literally in your body. And when we want to bring spirit into it, because I cannot not bring spirit into it, there is a way that what that colonizer did off the bat when he came off that European peninsula and they came into different locations like Western Africa to extract land and resources for their own benefit, how you do that in order to dehumanize people, to make them resources, to make them chattel, is you have to remove them from their power. And part of that power comes in that connection to where you come from, your ancestors in the land, that is that kind of as above, so below, or the kind of cosmology of the sacred and mundane are always in a relationship. When you need to reduce somebody down to something for your gain, you can make that disconnection. And so that disconnection from ancestors really came through the Christianization of enslaved peoples, and that forcing of Christianity via the Christian patriarch God really was the beginning of the breaking of the relationship that we had to our bodies, which then broke the relationship we had with our ancestors in those practices that also connected us to our land. Now, they weren't completely severed, because we have traditions now in the present day that are coming from and are products of that colonial projects, right? And we call them African traditional religions. So those are traditions like Lukumi, Santeria, Obeya, Candomblé, Haitian Vodou, New Orleans Voodoo, and African American Hoodoo, just to name a few. There are others as well, but those are some of the bigger ones. And these are all the types of practices that our ancestors and our elders kept alive in order to keep us connected to our ancestors and those primordial beings that connected us to land, because again, that is our power. But when we are in these very violent systems, right, even those practices were susceptible to the kind of embedding of this very extractive energy of capitalism. And so we see the kind of over-commercialization of many of these traditions. We see the synchronization that was required in order for them to be able to even operate really has impacted some of the understandings of the practices. So we see Christianity and patriarchy and racism and classism and homophobia. We see a lot of those things within these traditions that weren't based in those oppressive systems, yet they have made their way in one way, shape, or form. Because again, the spirit of capitalism did a very good job in the way it's foundational to our understanding of self, because the self, the body is marked with these identities. And then those identities have us put us in the boxes that we perform, which then allows us to learn how to disconnect from our bodies because they don't really feel good or work, which is then again, how we start that dehumanization process. process. That is the conditioning we need to make us good workers, to make us good workers and good servicers, right? And so this is part of that. When you think about it in these energetic ways, when you sit in your body and you believe your body and you allow that reality to collide in your body so that you feel, and then you allow that to have you see and reassess what your environment truly is and how you have to ask yourself then, can you still continue to partake in your own dehumanization now that you can see? Let me tell you something, when you have that realization, even if it's not as conscious, but it's on that spot and immediate, you get things like the Montgomery Brawl. Because that is us sitting in our humanity. That is us saying no more. That is us believing not just our experiences, but awakening the body so that we can feel and understand the weight of what our ancestors went through to be able just to be living in a space that we call the United States as Black folks in particular, right? While also being played in our face and being told that we are the problem and we must do X, Y, and Z, step and fetch, be seen as somehow always better, work twice as hard, be more respectable. All those things didn't work because you cannot be human in a society that has not been human since its foundings, because how can there be humanity when the whole goddamn nation state is built upon the subjugation of people that they rendered down to chattel? And then they tried to literally genocide those who were already here and supplement them by making themselves the new settlers. It doesn't make any sense, y'all. You cannot have humanity in these systems because they are dehuman and inhumane to begin with. So part of what we're seeing now, I honestly believe, is this kind of quote unquote awakening, because people are now being forced back into their bodies and the body is leading, because things like COVID and that is still going on and is now reports are showing how it's even worse now. And we need to be bracing ourselves for the rest of this summer into the fall alongside institutions crumbling. And it's not just the people who are on strike right now. We've seen healthcare around us collapsing for a few years now, and it's going to get worse alongside education, because we're going to go back into school, and God forbid we have any more shootings, quite frankly, in these institutions. We are coming at a crossroads individually and collectively of what it means to start to believe your experience by being in your body and allowing your body to lead. If you listen to the first two episodes, I did talk off and on about the astrology of all this, right? And how the last nodes of the moon, that north node being a Taurus, really was this kind of wake up call. And I always come back to that, because that is a Venus, that is the Venus feminine aspect. Taurus is the Venus, is Venus's feminine aspect, excuse me. And there's a way that Taurus really had us be in the reality that there's a materiality to being alive, and we are connected not just to that, but our one another and also the land around us. Because if we don't have sustenance, if we don't take care of the land, we have nothing to eat. It gets that really damn simple, right? And now we are in this kind of moment with that south node shifting. And now in Libra, the other part of Venus, the other sign of Venus, we are now being asked then to really ask ourselves individually and collectively, is this justice? What is justice? And what does it mean to actually center just ways? But we can't do and answer that unless till we actually realize that we are living in an unjust society, because it is a dehumanized one, because we have not been in our humanity collectively for a very long time. So what does it mean to be human right now? It means realizing you have a body, and that body is finite, and that body needs to lead. And if that body has been put down because of various ailments, because of COVID, because of a lack of infrastructure, because of the fact that no matter how much you work, if the institution decides to lay you off, you now have no access to care, but your body still needs care. That is a harsh reality that is letting us know how unhuman we have been to one another for so long. How society is built not for us, but for the select few who need our bodies. Therefore, they need us to disconnect from our bodies so that we continue to go. We continue to go to work, or we continue to fight. Hell, even these systems need to know where the cracks are. So activists and organizers are needed, because they need to know where the cracks are, right? But when you are only in this kind of go, 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 fight, fight, fight mode, and don't realize realize that part of the fight against this injustice is learning how to rest and be in your body so that you can allow your humanity to come back. We just keep feeding the damn machine, y'all. So right now, I think to wrap this all up, the focus of the body right now, and for me, being in my body has been one of the most fundamental parts of an abolitionist praxis for me, because it was only until I started to feel, it was only until I started to allow myself the space to tell myself the truth, but not through my mind, because my mind has been conditioned by these institutions like all of us has. And it is not this ridiculous conservative rhetoric of woke agenda. It is the conditioning we all go through to be in institutions. And this conditioning tells us that we must put our minds over our bodies so that even if you are sick, even if your family is sick, even if you are still in grief, you're supposed to put that into the side for an institution's priorities, right? When you realize the violence just in that, there is no way you can go back. There is no way you can tolerate it because now your body is alive. And that's what's happened to me, is that really not just leaving the job, as I said in episode one, but then having to sit in my body. It wasn't just the job that was killing me. It was not living. Because what we're doing right now is really being walking dead. We're not living. We were performing life that was benefiting, again, a small few, but not the collective. And now that the collective is, quote unquote, waking up, because the reality is resources are there, but they're not being allocated to the majority of us who absolutely need them. But then those who don't need them are telling us that we got to keep on going for less while they increase things, right? That is an awakening of the body, because you can only take so much. So again, who do you believe? What do you believe? Your body, which is bringing you to your humanity, which is awakening to your sense of self, or these spaces and institutions that literally have conditioned and trained us to disconnect from the body as a way for the mind to lead, because the mind keeps telling us, well, if we just do this one or two things, maybe somehow we'll get better. And so I think right now, this kind of, again, awakening is about the body awakening, which is coming back to our humanity, which means that we are engaging in another aspect of spiritual warfare, because the ancestors are also now awakening. Those old primordial ancestors from many of our lines, who maybe haven't necessarily had the ability to kind of push through the muck of the walking dead, both in the living and the other realms. Because again, I'll go into this much more on my Patreon. So if you want to learn more about ancestors and the different aspects of ancestors and why you can't just talk to any of them sometimes, especially at the beginning of your journey, go ahead and check out my Patreon. Over the next few months, I will be delving much more into that alongside the concepts of rest and coming back to the body, to come back to the human. Okay. But for the purpose of the podcast in this episode, I just want to say that when you do come to the body and you start to get into that practice of really coming to a sense of self-care by coming into a practice of rest that allows the body to really start to lead, and you can, your body then can start to trust you because you're trusting it. That does awaken a primordialness in us for those elevated ancestors who just needed space so that we can hear them. So the awakening of the body is also awakening the dead, but the primordial dead, the elevated dead, who can truly help us to remember not only who we are, who we were, so that we can figure new ways out of where we want to go individually and collectively as a society. Okay. I'm going to stop there, y'all. So thanks for joining me this time. Next episode, we're going to delve a little bit more into the ancestors. Okay. I'm going to talk more about that and my own journey with my ancestors and how that led me to Orisha and vice versa. And in doing so, they were really trying to tell my ass I was gay for a long time, but, the messages were always getting a bit jumbled, because the person who was hearing the messages was still filtering it through their human lens. And that human lens had been filtered through or influenced by patriarchy and Christianity, even though I was not in a Christian-based religion. Christianity still found its way. So I'll talk about that next time, okay? And as always, you can support my work. The show notes will have ways to do that. And take, that's it. Yeah, that's it. All right. So take care of yourselves and each other.